Comically Pedantic, where we take a detailed look at the complicated concepts, characters, and history of comic book culture. I'm Derek L. Chase, and joining me, as always, is the wonderful Corinne Levy.
It's me. Hi. I was going to, because normally what we do is we, like, play the intro live. I was like, if we want, I can just, like, make the intro music by myself. But we're not going to do that.
This is going to be like a weird one because basically every aspect of how we do this show is a little different today. Mm-hmm. For one, you do not have your microphone.
And no, I'm at the Levy household. I'm at my parents' house. I'm surrounded by taxidermy and I don't have my microphone or my anything. So we're going back to the beginnings of this podcast when I had nothing.
We're also using a different service because there was a problem with the one that we normally use. So we had to pivot last minute. I'm hoping this comes out well. I apologize to anyone that's listening if it sounds like shit. I promise you we did everything we could.
I don't apologize. This is simply how life goes sometimes. Sometimes you just gotta be stuck at your parents' house a couple of days longer. I'm just kidding. I love them very much. I'm very grateful for that, like, you know. I'm getting my car work done. It's a time. It's taking longer than we all thought, but at least I get some nice home-cooked meals that I don't have to cook. So I'm excited. It's fine. Everything's fine. This is great.
Well, since things are going so well for you, I guess I should ask what your bright spot is for the week.
I don't know, man. I get to see my family. That is a bright spot. I know it's for like a shitty situation with my car being poopé, but I love seeing my family. So like, that's good. Got to watch some fun movies with them.
What did you watch?
Oh, okay. Well, truly quite a wide range of things. one night we watched The Menu with like all four of us, which like is truly quite a film to watch with your family.
I watched like maybe 10 minutes of it and I realized I wasn't in the right like headspace to sit and watch it. So like I didn't continue.
Yeah, it's fine. I totally get it. You do have to be kind of in the mindset to watch. It's like a thriller, suspense, satire thing. I have like a, you know, like culinary like background. So like, you know, there's moments of like pretentious chefness and like, you know, kind of talking about like how like you got to cook with love and like how all these like, it's like, you know, it's one of those Eat the Rich movies where it's like all rich people are ruining everything and including like, you know, the love of cooking for chefs because they're put to such these dumb standards of like, you know, you gotta have crazy foams and shit like that, which is like, so like, yeah, I don't know, I liked it and I was also like, but sometimes like it's cool like because like, you know, not to go on like a culinary rant, but like those things are fun when you're excited to do them, you know, not when you feel like you have to because of like the market you work for. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think that goes for pretty much any job, like a thing where you have to do something like versus it being like, oh, this is a fun additive thing.
Yeah, it's like the pretentiousness comes from like being like, oh, like this is the only thing that makes like great cooking. And it's like, no, sometimes just like making a good pot of chili. Like, with your family is, like, what you need. So it's, like, you know, it's a movie like that. And it also, again, it, like, makes fun of rich people. And, like, it was fun. It was a good time. And then I watched some, like, you know, just, like, rom-coms with my mom. You know, like, a good, like, Melissa McCarthy.
I love Melissa McCarthy. She reminds me of my mom, to be very honest.
She is such, I mean, I love her in Gilmore Girls, as we've talked heavily about Gilmore Girls. But she's, like, one of my favorite characters in Gilmore Girls. And then just, like, she's just such, like, a beautiful woman inside and out. Like, I feel like she's just, like, she's got so much goodness, I feel like. I mean, like, you know, and it comes from outside. And I'm like, wow, what a cool lady. I always want the best for Melissa McCarthy. And then last night we watched The Greatest Beer Run Ever.
I don't even know what this is, but I like the
name. It's actually really cool. It's based off of a true story. There was a guy, his name was Chickie Donahue, during Vietnam. He was like in New York, just like, and he was kind of like a barfly. And a lot of his like friends in the neighborhood, you know, they were drafted for the war. And like, you know, at this point in the war, you have like a lot of like the journalist stories coming back about how like actually shitty the war is and like, what are you even fighting for kind of thing. So then there's a lot of the peace protests starting. And so like Chicky and his friends are like, man, we have like our friends over there and some of them are dying and like, you know, they're not feeling supported or like, you know, things like that. And that's probably really disheartening. And he's like, why don't I just go over there and bring him some beers from the guys?
Okay, I like this.
To like show that, you know, we still care about them and like they're, you know, they're doing what they need to do. Like just to show support. And so he does it. He used to work on merchant ships. And so he gets a job on a ship that's going to Vietnam. And he like ends up like in battle zones, like just to give like his neighborhood pals like beers. And like, you know, it goes through kind of like how he's like experiencing this war. And like, you know, at first he's like a very like patriotic guy, like you gotta respect the president and like, you know,
yeah,
these peace protests aren't helping, like if anything, like you're hurting our guys. And like, you know, he's not like, you know, but he gets like a lot of perspective from it. And he also does this batshit crazy thing of bringing beers to people in Vietnam. And so like I had like heard about him before, like I'd heard about his story before, and I wanted to see the movie, so we got to watch it last night. And it was good. It's got Zac Efron in it. He plays.
Oh, I like Zac Efron.
Yeah, he plays Shane Donahue. It's like there are moments where it's like this is straight goofy, and then like, you know, there's moments where it's like, wow, this is like really heartbreaking, and like I feel for this guy. But it was pretty good. I was a fan. And I just think that's like a really awesome like true story from history that like you don't hear much about. Like I like things like that, like when it comes to like my history, it's like
weird, like often overlooked, just strange things.
Like he's literally just a guy. He's just a guy. And like,
you're right, yeah,
he made it back.
Oh, I honestly did not expect
he made it back. Spoiler alert. And like he was able to like, I guess like somebody helped him write a book about his experience. That kind of shows you some of the craziest stories are true. It's wild. But yeah. So I've been doing a lot of that. But like, hopefully I'll be heading back to my home soon so I can see my cat and Maxito and stuff. So I miss them, my boys.
For me, I think, I actually was thinking about this like pretty much all morning. And the only thing that I could come up with was something like, I guess like self-reflection and the ability to like kind of like improve. I have been doing a lot of like different things. Like I found a barber I really like who actually does like my hair, my beard, everything like the way that I want it. Got that going. I've been like cleaning my house and like maintaining it way better than I was before. Mm-hmm. But also, I was editing a bunch of our older episodes. And I realized there are several things that I say quite often on the show because I genuinely don't remember if I've brought them up on the show before. And it's just really funny to me that this is a thing that keeps happening. And I can just imagine if someone was listening to the show, having like this motherfucker brings up this thing every single episode.
What, like,
and I think
like that you talk about X-Men a lot, like,
well, X-Men or like
roast you or anything, but you
I do like the X-Men, but specifically something like me stating the, you know, the part of the dichotomy of me is like how much I like horror, and then my go-to example is always Sonic the Hedgehog in the opposite direction.
Yeah, no, it really is. It's like occasionally you'll spice things up with the Power Rangers, but like, right, 99% of the time, like, you just like that hedgehog, man.
It's cute and it's fun and I like it. But it's just one of those things that I was listening to this and I was like, huh, I did not realize that this was a thing that was just, I guess, like a compulsion or like a tick of mine, that like I am constantly going to. And yeah. There's like a part of you that for a moment.
So much, you know, like, so it's in the forefront when it comes to examples, like.
Right. Yeah. But there's a part of you that, like, when you come across something like that, you kind of go, oh, this, you could lean into like, this is an embarrassing thing. Like, I need to like fix this about myself. Or you could just acknowledge it as like just a silly thing that you do and be like, oh, okay, well, I'll be more cognizant of that in the future. And that's kind of where I fell on it. But there is that like moment where you're like, oh no, I feel bad about this. Then, you know, whatever. Yeah. So it's that self-reflection and the need to like constantly improve, I guess. I think that kind of fits together as like a bright spot that I've had over the like the last week, just constantly doing something different to get better and learning from the things that I've done in the past.
No, that makes sense. And like what you're saying, I also can like relate to, because I mean, and I also like, I refer to Sandman and Saga frequently.
Right.
I have always been aware of it, but it's also because for me, that is because I'm still building my reading repertoire, I guess you could call it. Like, which is why I then decided to come up with the goal of like, try and read something from like essentially every genre and right. Like, you know, we'll see if we can find some new things that I'll really connect with or like, you know, want to reference and things like that. Just so, you know, I'm not stuck in a box, my two S's box, my Saga and Sandman. So yeah, you know, but that's fun. It's good to like learn things about yourself, you know, like, you can't always look outward because what's the use in that? I probably look into myself too much and then I become anxious, but that's a different podcast.
Well, I think I kind of do the same, but it just, there are certain things that you're not prepared to learn that you've done. And I think that's kind of where that sort of came up. But oh well. I mean, you know, we're doing what we can, the two of us.
And we both have. Like, I mean, referencing Sonic a bunch is fine because it's just like, it's a wholesome thing. You like what you like, and that's okay. Like, I mean, if you want to like other things or like discuss the other things that you like, you're more than welcome to. Like, thankfully, like, these are the things that we're repeating and not like unhealthy like behaviors or like, you know, vocab and stuff like that. It's like,
right.
It's, yeah. I just like Sonic, you know, or, oh, this reminds me of a thing from Sandman. So, but we're trying. We're going to expand, everybody. We're going to read more than just two things.
Well, speaking of expanding, this episode's going to be a little bit different than what we normally do. See, normally on this show, we either do a deep dive into comic book nonsense like Comicsgate or our ongoing coverage of the Clone Saga. But I do like to take a break every now and then to look at something a little less intensive. We've done that before with like Dazzler or Sonic the Hedgehog. We've done a couple episodes on that. And that's mostly what today is going to be about. We're going to be doing an ongoing series of looking into some of the funnier, why did this get printed? Oddities made by the comic book industry. I've curated a few that I thought would be at least a little interesting to talk about, but that doesn't mean that I'm aware of all of them. So if any of you have a few that you'd like to email to the show, feel free. We'd like to do a follow-up on this with what you've chosen. Hopefully it's something that is like not just a quick like, oh, here's a single panel that has absolutely no relevance to anything else. But
oh, but it could be, though. I wouldn't mind that. but my question for you is to like, because, you know, I know you have found most of like the sources for this. What are we defining an oddity as? Because I know we also want to talk about, at some point, we want to talk about mistakes in comics. So,
right.
What are you defining as an oddity per se?
So for me, I'm actually going to start this with what actually it starts as a mistake, but then I feel like it turns into an oddity. Something that like is maybe not entirely deliberate, I would consider a mistake. Something where like someone clearly goofed up and it is
like something that was overlooked that should have been like an editing is a mistake for sure. Like,
right. Yeah. And then like an oddity, I would look at as something that there is some level of intentionality behind it. maybe not entirely on everyone's part, but at least on like a person's part that is involved. There's one I'm not using for today, but it's like maybe sneaking a secret message into a comic book. So it's like the publisher, that was a mistake that should have been caught. But like that person who snuck that in, that there was intention behind that.
Yeah, like to me, because like an oddity would be kind of like all the random, like some random subliminal messaging in like Disney movies, like in the stars where like spell something out or like.
Yeah, yeah.
What's up with the castle on the VHS cover? Like someone drew that and like they know what they were doing, but like a mistake might be like. They misspelled something, nobody caught it, and it totally changes the meaning of a sentence kind of thing.
Yeah. I think for our sake, oddity is going to be something that I guess I'm going to leave intentionally vague, but it's going to be something that is like slightly interesting. There's some intentionality behind it, like how it got published. And it's got to be something that is just a little weird. Like it's not something that you would entirely expect. There is a through line, I think, with the ones that I've chosen for today, where there is a twist on what you would, normally see from, the publisher. We're only, this particular episode, we're only doing Marvel and DC.
Okay.
But that's because they're the ones that have the easiest sort of like.
They're the biggest targets.
No. Right.
I got it.
So I think I wish I had a better explanation for like what an oddity would be, but like it's kind of the like you know it when you see it, like it's just weird and someone did something that they probably shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. So since we have been spending a good deal of time on the show discussing Spider-Man, I thought it would be interesting to start with the Webhead himself. So everybody knows Spider-Man is Peter Parker or Ben Reilly or Miles Morales. But most people, when they think of Spider-Man, at least the original Spider-Man, they think of Peter Parker. And part of the reason for this is Stan Lee's use of alliterative naming techniques. There's Reed Richards, Sue Storm, Scott Summers, Warren Worthington, Pepper Potts, Matt Murdock, J. Jonah Jameson. All of those are just like a handful of the ones that he's created where it's like,
right.
Okay, you clearly like alliterative names. Stan explained in an interview back in 2006 that this was strategic because he says, I have the worst memory in the world. So I finally figured out if I could give somebody a name where the last name and the first begin with the same letter, I could at least remember one name. And it could give me a clue as to what the other name was. And this little trick seems to have helped him throughout his career, but that doesn't mean that it's without hiccups. And one major one happened incredibly early on in Spider-Man's career as a costumed crime fighter. I'm going to ask you to guess a couple of things for me, and I want you to really guess. There are no wrong answers. Okay. Your role in this is to be the person who doesn't have much encyclopedic knowledge of comic books, so there's no shame in not knowing perfect. The answer.
I have no encyclopedic knowledge of especially Marvel.
So my first question for you is, what year did Spider-Man debut?
What year? Yeah. My guess is probably somewhere in the 60s. Maybe like, okay. Because like, I remember seeing like photos of just like, you know, old comic strips that are, they look very vintage. So I'm going to say maybe like 66, 1966 okay. is my guess.
My next question is, what is the name of the comic book that he debuted in?
Oh, I don't know. Is this, okay, when it comes to, like, a debut, is this, like, they made a cameo of the character and then he got his own comic book?
I wouldn't necessarily call it a cameo, but it's, like, his origin story was in a comic book that was not called Spider-Man.
Okay. Were there any other superheroes involved of this, like, comic with his origin? Or is it just a comic book that's got Peter Parker getting bitten by a spider? Like,
no, it is a so the series was like an anthology. Me
asking you 20.
No, it's okay. No, it's good. The series was an anthology where like pretty much every issue there would be like a different story that would be Like, we're going to focus on this crazy thing.
Okay. So the comic that he is introduced in, if it's okay, I got two yeses. I feel like it's something like Caped Crusaders or something like that. That seems very, like, of the time. Because I'm also thinking of alliteration. So that's my first guess, is, like, you know, something Caped Crusaders. And then my other one is, like, a Spectacular Spider-Man or something like that. Those are my two guesses.
You're actually very close with the second one. So Spider-Man debuted in Amazing Fantasy number 15. So, I mean, you didn't really get the spectacular part, you know, yeah, whatever, but like...
You're close. You simply had an adjective and a noun.
Well, but Spectacular Spider-Man is like an adjective that is given to him, and it is
I know that Spectacular Spider-Man is actually like a run at some point, isn't it? Like, because there's like Amazing Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, there's like Ultimate, Unlimited... Wow, I have more encyclopedia than I thought. That truly, I blacked out for a minute.
So, Amazing Fantasy number 15 debuted in, was published in 1962. The comic was such a massive success that it was followed in March of 1963 with an ongoing title named The Amazing Spider-Man. So, Peter Parker is firmly established in Amazing Fantasy, and then the very next issue that he appears in is of his own series.
Okay.
In Amazing Fantasy 15, Spider-Man is frequently spelled without the hyphen. It's just Spider-Man, no hyphen between Spider and Man. Mm-hmm. This could be a simple mistake that's quickly looked over, but when we get to Amazing Spider-Man number 1, which was just, again, like a year later, has Stan's most famous character referred to as Peter Palmer. Subsequent appearances would have Peter referred to as Parker, and the entire comic book industry largely just forgets that this thing has ever happened. But that's part of the fun of these types of episodes. We want to look into the weirdness that we can find that has largely just been forgotten.
Yeah.
At least I would say that this type of thing was forgotten. But then we flash forward to 2023 and find out it's become something entirely different. For those that want a little bit of the behind the scenes information about this show, I originally wrote this episode well over a year ago in preparation to do some silly things that we could easily put out. So why is that relevant? Because the next line I had written states, I personally think it would be interesting to have this be followed up on currently with there being a Spider-Man from another universe named Palmer or something like that. I mean, there was also an actor around the time of Amazing Fantasy's publishing that was named Peter Palmer. So it could have just been Stan not thinking too hard and just getting the name of this relatively new character wrong. But Spider-Man did start out by doing tricks on TV, so it could be a fun way to playing up that alternative take on the character for a silly gag. So just a few months after I wrote that, Spider-Man Volume 4, number 4, debuted and introduced Spider-Man, a hyphenless take on the character named Peter Palmer.
Oh, so they brought him back!
I didn't read the whole series because, as I've mentioned before, I don't find many of the newer Spider-Man books that interesting, and I particularly don't care for the Spider-Verse stories. But from what I could gather, there are multiple heroes from across the multiverse banding together to fight some bad guy with Madame Web. When he's brought in, he's drawn to look exactly like how the character looked in Amazing Fantasy, including having the blue spider symbol on the back of the costume, and even comments that he is a big TV star in his home dimension. They brought back, like, they literally, like, they took a mistake and then decades later said, wouldn't it be funny if that was, if there's an alternate universe that has all of these, like, mistakes that were made in the original couple of issues.
Yeah, and I think, like, the oddity in and of itself could, to me, is also just the fact of, like, whether Spider-Man is hyphenated or not. Because, like, I never know. I never do. In my mind, it's almost like a Mandela effect of, like, you know, is it hyphenated or not? I never thought it was until I had to start, like, finding Spider-Man comics to read. And now I would, like, be searching and searching, but I would never find what I was looking for because I had to add a stupid hyphen.
Well, so the hyphen, according to Stan, and, I mean, he's an unreliable source when it comes to, like, why he does whatever he does, because he's really quick to, like, kind of pump himself up. According to him, the reason the hyphen exists is because he didn't want there to be any sort of confusion with Superman. Like, he wanted it to be very clearly, like, Spider-Man is Spider, hyphen man. When like you go to read a Superman book, it's Superman. I don't know. But
yeah, that's weird. It's also like, I mean, not to like kick the dyslexic people out of the chat, but like those are very clearly two different words, spider and super. Like there's
I mean, I've mixed them up in talking in the past. Oh, you know, like I go to say Spider-Man, I'll say Superman. Oh. I'm like, I meant Spider-Man.
Not right, I'm wrong,
it's just like thought. I think it lives in a certain part of your brain, I think, where it's just like they're close enough. At least for me.
I guess I'm just thinking of like I get there's like an S and a P, and but I don't know. I guess because in my mind, like they do such different things. Like one of them specifically like sticks to walls and like has webs, like yeah. That I find. But look, I could be wrong. I'm just one weirdo. Like I don't like. I'm not the expert here, so I could be wrong. I guess it kind of makes sense. But, like, also a hyphen is this very tiny line, and if you're making comic book art, you're using more whimsical letters. You're not just, like, typing it out. Like, you know, you've got, like, block lettering and stuff. So, like, it's still gonna, to me, like, look like one word. I don't know. I just don't like Stanley's answer. I think this is what we're coming to.
Well, to speak to what your point was a little bit ago, in Amazing Fantasy 15, when it was produced pretty much only on the cover and in the title page, is Spider-Man hyphenated. The rest of the book, it's not.
Okay.
So, like, it gets confusing if you're, like, trying to figure it out. It's not until, like, he's more established that the hyphen becomes a more important part of, like, how it's written. And Peter, in the comics even, has, like, made a big deal about like no, it is spider hyphen man.
That's another thing that I find funny that I was like thinking, like, do you think that like superheroes like care grammatically about their name, or are they like too busy fighting crime? I guess my answer is they're not too busy fighting crime, and they would like the reporters to know.
Well, I mean, there for Spider-Man, he got his start like doing like TV stunts, so I'm sure there's like some sort of like a copyright on like the way that his name is to be presented. Mm-hmm. I mean, even in the, like, the Ultimate Universe or the old Ultimate Universe, Peter at one point, like, he doesn't own the rights to Spider-Man because he started as, like, a wrestler there.
Oh, yes, he does.
Yeah. The Kingpin buys the rights to the name and, like, likeness of Spider-Man. So, like, there is some sort of legality around how the name is produced. It's kind of interesting.
That's so funky.
I would like more of an explanation, like, or an exploration of that.
Well, and that's really funky, too, because it's almost like it feels very much like the writers and, like, the publishers are inserting themselves into the story, like, fighting over, like, yeah. How to, like, write out this name when it's, like, that's pretty wild. Yeah. What a time, though. But yeah, I frequently would get that confused. I guess it's official. It is hyphenated. And I'm going to just have to deal with that.
While most of the sillier aspects of comic books have been made in the early days of Marvel's history, we're actually going to skip ahead to decades after Spidey became a hit. The comic we are now going to discuss was produced, but after some pushback, it was re-released with a big change. We are going to start by talking about Spider-Man Reign, which was first starting to be sold in December of 2006. The series featured a much older Peter Parker who had retired from crime fighting only to have to be pulled back in. In this regard, and partially due to the tone of the series, it was widely recognized as The Dark Knight Returns, but for Spider-Man. It also happened to have multiple controversies. Perhaps the part of the story that caught the most side eye was the revelation that Mary Jane's untimely death was due to Peter's radioactive sperm from every time that they had sex without protection. For anyone that's listening to the show, Corinne just straight up put her head in her hands.
I had to face palm a little bit. I'm sorry. That's just weird. Like,
yeah. That's not even what we're like. That's just out.
People were like, no. Like, scientifically, these little swimmers here, they're killers.
I mean, back when the series was released, Wired criticized Mary Jane's odd death, accusing Marvel Comics of having finally gone porno.
Oh.
But I can, like, I've read Spider-Man Reign, and I'm not a fan. And, like, Mary Jane's death is weird, but I don't think it's the weirdest thing in the book. Like, yeah. It kind of fits the tone, but there's just, like, some weird stuff that happens throughout that book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that just seems like an oddball run. Like, I think it's funny, so, like, I don't hate it. I just, like, it's funky, though.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. We're
actually not going to talk much about that because... I want to look at a piece of art from the very first issue of Spider-Man Reign. That's what got the book recalled.
Okay.
As the elderly Peter Parker sits on the edge of his bed, hands on his face, his genitals were exposed for the first time in the character's history.
Oh my God!
Spidey's little web shooter appears for exactly one panel, but that one panel was enough to cause a problem for Marvel, even though this book had been passed along many hands before it ever made it to a printer. This issue was soon recalled, and the image was altered for the second run of Spider-Man Reign, number one, for fear of corrupting minors. So, there is an image out there, and it's not like a full-on, super detailed view of Peter Parker's penis, but you can see some spider dick.
That's wild. I don't know if I want to, like, look for it now. Like, I don't know, like, what kind of person that would make me.
Oh, no. I'm about to out Austin for something, because the next thing we're going to talk about, Austin 100% Googled because she wanted to see the image.
Oh my God.
So while we're on the subject of dicks, let's talk about Batman.
Ah, Batman!
This one follows a pretty similar setup to the previous example, including that it was produced before being changed to get rid of the offending material.
Mm-hmm.
The first issue of Batman Damned features a scene in which Batman goes to the Batcave and strips off his costume, sparking a ton of controversy in the process because some panels showed Batman's penis for the first time ever. Around 115,000 uncensored copies were published. DC co-publishers Jim Lee and Dan DiDio attributed the lack of censorship to production errors. The colors had to be brightened to make the scene more visible, which in turn caused Batman's penis to become noticeable, something that, as an artist, I say is bullshit, because you don't have to draw his dick.
Screw that. Like
that's not something... Like, they put highlights on his penis. You could have just blacked out that... In fact, most artists do just black out that part of the anatomy when doing shadows.
Yeah, like, put out an emotional, like, fog effect.
Yeah. But they... apparently, we're not aware that Batman's dick was going to be seen in this image, which I call bullshit. Because when you see the image, there is no way. Like, if I'm reading quickly, I probably wouldn't necessarily. But if you're looking at the art.
The whole point of a comic book is to read and look. Like, they're not making 90% of this pictures just so you can, like, I only want to read the plot. No, like, no, you're looking at the character. That is... Yeah. That's batshit.
So DC parent Time Warner had just merged with AT&T and as a result pursued a family-friendly and corporate product at the time of Damned's release. I think that has more to do with the recalling of the comic book and the subsequent, like, oh, we didn't know. We had no idea.
Yeah.
Didio said the controversy really took the attention away from what we thought was quality storytelling. DC decided to remove the nudity from future printings, causing prices of uncensored copies to skyrocket, and shortly after, editorial changes were put in place out of fear of repeats. This led to development on other Black Label titles halting and the cancellation of the religious satire Second Coming. It's not like a play on the coming part. It's about Jesus coming back. Like, it looks like an interesting book. I'm sure it is, but I haven't read it.
Right.
DC also made the second issue of Damned returnable, and the controversy led to the series receiving minimal promotion. I actually hadn't read the series before writing this little piece because I only knew about the penis panel and I didn't think anything of the series. But I did go back and I read it for this, and it's okay. It's It's not spectacular. It's a little too over the top, edgy, kind of for like what I'm looking for. It feels very much like a 15-year-old wrote it. There's even a scene where Harley Quinn tries to rape Batman, and it just kind of rubs me the wrong way. Like, it's a very weird part of the book.
Yeah.
DC's rationale that the nudity was unnecessary for the story was met with criticism from journalists who felt it conflicted with the mature nature of the Black Label comics. I mean, the whole point of doing Black Label is to do, like, mature books.
Yeah, I think also, though, like, sometimes just, like, random nudity almost isn't mature. Like, it's an adult being kind of childish. Like,
are you trying to tell me that the 80s and 90s horror movies that I grew up with that had just an obscene amount of nudity in them, that wasn't there for like artistic purposes?
I hate to break it to you, but the movies that I also watched and kind of grew up with, unfortunately, I don't think it was necessary. I mean, like, even, like, if you look at, like, HBO, like, so, yeah. Okay, this is, I know this is gonna sound so wild on my part, but when I was in, like, high school, Game of Thrones was huge. Mm-hmm. And, I, you know, I didn't know a ton about it. I just, like, at the time, my family had HBO, and, but my mom also wanted to watch the show, and we watched like the first episode together, and it seemed like a really good show. And then, you know, we kind of forgot it was an HBO show. So there's going to be a lot of like crazy shit in it. So, yeah. I watched Game of Thrones with my mom, almost the whole show until I went to college, and then like the last two seasons were finishing up. I watched that whole show with my mom, and there were points where there were just random nudity scenes that like and sex scenes that were absolutely unnecessary to the plot, to the point that her and I would look at each other and we'd be like, this is so boring. We would fast forward through like these unnecessary moments, because it's like, like, what are you trying to prove? It's like, oh, we're a network that can do that? Is that, like...
I think that's part of it, yeah.
And it's just kind of, like... it's annoying. Like, it's annoying to have to fast forward through irrelevant shit. Because then you gotta hope that the scene ends to something relevant. Like, you know, like, thankfully, me and my mom have a good relationship. That we were able to like just watch a good show together that had a lot of weird shit in it. But like it sucks when it's just like, you know, other scenes, it's like, I get it, it makes sense. This is like a power move or something. But if you're just like, what's the point of just having like random titties and dicks when they're not important?
Yeah, there is a weird I also find it very strange when movies just have like, well, we're at like the 40-minute mark, time to like whip out some tits, because like that's the part of the movie that where we gotta like wake people up.
And it's one thing if it's like, you know, the context of the genre. If you're, you know, if you're reading a romance novel or a like something and romance, like the romance is clearly like a part of the story and of the genre that you're writing in, then like sure, like that fits. But if you're just like watching like, I don't know, a crime drama or like, you know, an action or like a, you know, or just reading a comic book, like obviously like if there's a reason to have it, like I'm so for it. Like, show me what you got to show me, like, for this story, because that's why I'm here. I'm here for the story. Like, I'm not here to, like, and maybe that's just the kind of reader that I am, though. Like, I don't know. Like, but also, if you're the kind of reader that wants to see Batman's dick, then, like, people should be writing things explicitly for Batman's dick, not for, like, just, oh, it magically pops up because someone just wanted to draw it for shits and giggles. Like, if anything, that's taking away from like what you're supposed to be paying attention to. So,
yeah, I think the other thing that I was going to state about that is there are also scenes where it feels like you made a choice to not show nudity, and that is weird. Like, there are two different ways to approach these things, and it very much relies on the context of the genre that you're within, the movie, TV show, book, whatever that you're within, and like the intention behind those things.
Yeah.
I don't know if I brought it up. I think I brought it up on one of the last episodes that we recorded. But, you know, I was talking about hack slash. There is an entire section of like hack slash comic books that are very about like nudity and like the sex scenes and stuff like that. But that's part of that genre.
Like you,
and like that makes sense.
You were supposed to see some booty cheek in that one. And like, that makes sense. I'm not going to complain about that because I know what I'm getting into when it comes to something like hack slash or again, like, you know, like that 80s horror like movie where it's like, or especially the 70s horror movies where it's like, why are their boobs just out? It's like, because it was the 70s. Like, so of course, like that makes sense. I mean, sometimes it really just didn't have anything to do with it.
Like, no,
like, I guess, okay, hold on. So it, because I'm gonna try and find out this so my point actually makes sense. When they're making the movies in the 70s, was the nudity required for the story? Absolutely not required for the story. However, what then happened over time is they created a genre for themselves, which was like bloody horror. Like, just like everyone's boobs are out and everyone's naked and like dying. And like they made that almost subgenre for themselves. Mm-hmm. And it either aged fine or it didn't. Whatever. And then if people are going to be writing, like, you know, let's say you want to write a comic book that is very like reminiscent of a specific era, then like, yes, that makes sense. But again, that is like writing and drawing for the context of what you're going for. Like, so I guess like it all goes back to like, what was the point of this Batman? Like, what were they going for? Because it sounds like they don't know what they were going for.
I know that I 100% agree with that. I don't think they knew what they were getting into or what they were really wanting to accomplish with drawing this.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some criticism back and forth about like, oh, it's bullshit that they censored it. And, you know, people have spoken about that. But the thing that I think is kind of bullshit is the artist, Bermejo, he called the whole thing the biggest bullshit non-controversy in comics history. And DC mistreated him and the writer following this, including like unusual encounters with other DC employees and having the artist constantly have to redraw artwork because the editors like stepped in and they were like, oh, no, we got to like keep an eye on this guy who drew Batman's dick. And it's like, well, you have editors for a goddamn reason. And that was something that like you chose to allow until it became something that you thought might cause a problem for your image or the bottom line.
And that's also like a thing that it's like, maybe you need to take a look at like your process of making a comic book. Like, how much are you defining the boundaries of your artists and your writers appropriately or not? Because if you're just telling them, I just want, like, I don't know, make up your own thing. And they make up something that's like, you know, like incredibly edgy or like very like explicit, you know, whatever. And then they give it to you, like, but then you're upset with them or don't communicate that you're upset with them. That then becomes like on you because you as like the publisher or the editor or whatever, like, would you not be responsible for being like, this is what we can and can't do? And then, like, that's up to you guys to communicate that. Like,
oh, yeah.
So it's like, you know, and then if this guy does draw Batman's dick and he was told not to draw Batman's dick, then, like, then that is his problem. And, like, you know, he should be watched for doing that. But also, if you gave them, like, all this incredible amount of freedom and they thought that this was, like, best, or that it's just like, this is what I wanted to do. And they told me I could do whatever I wanted. Like, and then you're mad about it. It's like, well, then it's on you because you told them they could do whatever you wanted. And that wasn't true. So.
Yeah. And it's, I didn't write this part because it just wasn't something that I was going to comment on this episode, but it kind of flows with what we were talking about. Marvel had a series of more mature oriented graphic novels that they were being that were being published in the 80s. And one of those featured She-Hulk. And I genuinely don't remember if I've talked about She-Hulk on the show, but I love She-Hulk. I've been a big fan like since the 80s. Mm-hmm. Well, since the 80s books, not since the 80s. And I particularly, like I specifically went out and bought this graphic novel because I was really into the character and I wanted to have something like a more pristine thing. And also at the time, the inker on the book was a teacher of mine. So right. I got the book and I specifically went to him and I was like, can you please sign this for me? I also had the opportunity to ask him, I hope he doesn't get mad about this. I had the opportunity to ask him about a couple of scenes in the book. It's actually in one scene, but it's a couple of panels where She-Hulk is shot by a bunch of like guards on this shield helicarrier. Okay. And her clothing is ripped and torn. And you can see her nipples in a couple of panels. And this had been a thing that had been like put online about how like no one would really cop to like the nipples being put there, like how they got there. Apparently, according to Kim, the inker, John Byrne, who drew it, didn't include the nipples. But Kim, being the inker on the book, knew like that's where your nipples go. Like on a person's body.
Okay.
And he knew that this was a more mature book and it was supposed to be like for mature readers. So he just added the nipples in and it got published that way and then became a problem. So it goes into that sort of like, you don't necessarily, like you come up with this is for mature readers, but you don't define that. And you don't let the people working on it know what is and isn't acceptable. According to Kim, he thought that this was something that was going to fly and was acceptable. And it did get published. But apparently Marvel didn't want to back, this is like what we're going to do now.
Right. So. Because they didn't create the boundaries and define them.
Yeah. They went with, oh, we're just going to do what we normally do. And we're going to say this is for like mature audiences. I mean,
yeah, like, there's like what's making it mature? Is it the plot line? Is it like the violence or is it the nudity or is it like, what is it?
There is nothing in that graphic novel other than the nipples that make any sort of difference to what you could pick up in a regular She-Hulk comic.
Right.
Like the violence is not over the top. The storyline is not over the top. Like none of it matters outside of just those nipples being in it. So it's like, why was this part of the mature line of graphic novels?
Yeah.
You just wanted She-Hulk in a book. And I've read some of the other mature graphic novels and nothing really stands out about them either.
Right.
It was just a thing that they were putting out at the time. And I think they wanted to market it a particular way. And
yeah,
that's all. It was marketing. It wasn't anything else.
Yeah, that's a pain in the butt.
That's all I really have for this episode. I wanted to keep it kind of short and sweet. I didn't expect us. I thought we were going to get into a little bit of talk about the dicks, but I didn't expect it to turn into like a longer talk about just nudity in general and the way that intersects with art and business. But I mean, that's part of the fun of doing something like this. It's a little different from what we normally do. Yeah.
Here's the thing. We always say it's going to take quick 30 minutes. And then in my head, I'm like, no, it's going to take an hour.
Yeah. I mean, I specifically, I don't know if you ever checked the shared calendar, but we have a shared calendar and I specifically blocked out an hour and a half, even though I thought we'll get through it much faster.
Yeah. We know ourselves.
Yeah.
We really can't take pedantic out of the title.
No, of course not. I think that like was kind of fun. What like how did you enjoy this little foray?
No, I thought this was fun. I learned a lot. Hyphens still annoy me because I also when we were talking about Spider-Man Reign, I Googled Spider-Man because I was like, I'm gonna find that. I gave up. I didn't find it. I don't need to find it. It's fine. But when you go on Google, you get either Spider-Man hyphen or just Spider-Man. Like, there's two options, and they both show you Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So the internet doesn't help with this weird one. But no, that was fun. And I think it's, like, a good exercise of, like, getting to talk about, you know, different parts of comics and, like, you know, who knows where it'll go. And stuff like that. So
yeah, part of my thought process in doing something like this is like that particular like set of things that we just discussed, like there's not enough there to fill like a regular episode. We would have very short episodes if we were just to do one of those. But to lump a few of them together, I still think like there is something to learn and to discuss there. I want to know more about like weird shit that's happened in the industry, and this is a great way of looking at
it. Yeah, for sure. No, I would say so. And like again, it does get you thinking of other things. Like I know you thought we would just talk about like how crazy it is that superheroes have dicks, but also like again, we're about concepts. The concept of nudity, yeah, and like adult content in comic books. Like, are people communicating properly to actually have it be effective? It depends on if you got a good team or not, apparently.
Yes.
Like, and I could talk about that probably a lot more because, like, there are some, like, you know, I know we totally, this is so full circle about how I literally only talk about Sandman and Saga, but, like, to me, like, Saga's explicit content makes sense for when they're putting it in and, like, what they're doing with it. And, like, it's quite explicit, you know?
Oh, and some of it is very funny, too. Like, it adds something to the book.
They use it yeah, in a comedic setting for if that's what they're going through. And they're, you know, because that's, like, about a family and, like, about a young couple that are, like, figuring their shit out, like, during a crazy time when they're, like, by their society standards, not supposed to be in a relationship. So, of course, like, sex is relevant to their story. Like,
yeah.
So, and that makes sense. And that's cool. And I'm about it. And like, it's fun. But again, it makes sense. And it's done well. But that's also like a really great duo that work together that seem to like really like have their workflow like down. Yeah. But when you have such a, but that's also, you know, it's published by Image. It's a more independent thing as opposed to like, not saying Image isn't big, like Image has a ton of stuff that they publish and like, at this point, in terms of indie comics, they got a lot going on. But like, oh, yeah, in terms of something like DC, like I imagine, not that I've stepped foot in DC or Marvel, but I imagine it probably being more bureaucratic, you know, to a higher scale, like next year thing. So
I've never worked for DC, but I have been to DC's offices. Yeah. And it's very like you literally, it's a regular office building. You get let off, like they had like a Mad magazine floor and they had like a DC editorial floor.
Right.
And it's very like, if you read I'm going to forget the name of this. It's like Marvel Comics, The Untold Story. If you read that book, there is very clearly a line that was developed early in Marvel's career where Marvel was way more of the guys just show up, probably high. They do their art. They write, they, you know, and that gets published. It's very like free flowing kind of a thing.
Right.
And DC was always like people showed up in suits and they made business decisions. And I think that they've grown to be a little bit closer together than either would have thought back in the day.
Well, especially now that Marvel is owned by Disney.
So, but like you do get a little bit of that, like in these big industry, in these big publishers in the industry, they are a lot more control is being had and there's a certain public image that they want to maintain.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing we should talk about is like, you know, larger companies versus like smaller one day. I think that would be like interesting to like get into. I don't know how yet,
not to like brainstorm while we're recording, but like maybe we'll talk about that more one day.
Yeah, I mean, the ones that I like, there are some that are like mid-size, like just under Marvel and DC that I read a lot of, but there's also some, like the ones that I got into when I was younger, it's sort of like the underground comics scene. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is like more for like alternative lifestyles, I suppose, or what you would consider. They were like abortion comics, gay comics, things like that. Mm-hmm. When it wasn't necessarily something that was so mainstream. Like I literally have a copy of a book called Gay Comics. So like, those are like smaller and you have to like go to a place to, I mean, you can probably find them at a regular comic book store now, but you would have to go somewhere like a hole in the wall to find these kind of, comics. Yeah. And, that I would consider way more independent. And then you would get a step up being like something like Boom. And then Dark Horse, and then Image, and then Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting, the way that those books are published across these different publishers is, I think, really interesting.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about it one day. This was fun talking about weird shit.
You can find more information at comicallypedantic.com. You can also follow us on Instagram by searching at PedanticCast. New episodes come out most Sundays on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and at comicallypedantic.com. If you have any comments or questions, you can send them in text or audio recording to comicallypedantic@gmail.com. Please indicate if you'd like your name or question read on the air. Also, don't forget, we still own fuckcomicsgate.com if you'd like to send a donation to the Games and Online Harassment Hotline. We will be back soon with another deep dive into the world of comics, but until then, you can find more exciting adventures at your local comic shop.
Woo!
So while we're on the subject of dicks, let's talk about Batman.